Welcome to episode 21 of the Sign Radio Show. Super Oak joins us today to talk about Tiny Intros, the Sudoku for demo sceners, hard mode, where an effect might fit into as little as 16 bytes. He tells us more about the community, the joy of chasing that last byte, and why the current hype is not only entertaining to size coders.
Welcome to episode 21 of the Zine Radio Show. I'm Waki.
I'm Axel.
And I'm Zivoid.
Welcome, everybody.
New season, another episode. We keep on going. It's awesome. We have good stuff planned for this episode.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Small things.
Small things.
Tiny things coming up.
Small things in tiny pack. Good things come in tiny packages, or what is it saying? Coming up later in this episode, we have an interview with Super Rogue to talk about size coding. Mm. It's going to be a good time. I'm looking forward to that.
Are you guys continuous followers of the smaller productions out there, or where's your limit mostly placed?
I tend to just watch them when they're on parties that I watch. I'm not really part of that community bit. I'm just amazed about the size aspect of things. Like, you can't do this in 256 bytes, but that's me.
Yeah, so like size, we're gonna get deeper into this, but that's the same. Is that it's like magic to me. Like, I kind of get assembly coding and kind of like, but this is just like, it's very specific. So, what I know is like, it's a super like deep scene that's like very, very cozy together. And so I'm looking forward to talk about it and discuss it. Like, what is the magic of size coding? We get to that later. First, news. So guys, any news from you? Any things you should talk about?
No, but we wonder where you're standing with your cables project.
It's quite similar as last month, to be honest. Unfortunately, after Christmas break and work, haven't gotten around to it.
Come on.
But keep badgering me every episode to ask me where I am, and one day there will be a magical answer.
Look, the minimum thing you're going to do next time is going to hold two cables into the camera so we can, at least when we're talking like this.
It's absolutely on the list for 2022, and I leave it at that. But yeah, let's talk about new things that did finish. There is a new project, a new platform launched by Conspiracy called the Disk Mac Onlineification Platform. I don't know if you guys heard
about
it.
That was a surprise, wasn't it? If there's one thing that I would not have expected from them, is that they bother about disk Macs from the old times.
That's Conspiracy for you. So yeah, let me get the URL out. That's on diskmag.net. Disk Mac as in D-I-S-K, mag, magazine.net, where you can read, just to explain that as well, you can read online versions of old disk Macs that used to run on your computer as an executable program. Disk magazines, for the younger listeners, were like magazines. They were like websites with information, but then running locally in a program. And also like magazines. Am I saying that correctly? Axel, you are disk mag authority in this chat.
Yeah, that sounds good. But I was wondering, where are we with the Zine disk mag?
Oh, you're not on it. Oh, is this a request in the episode to get Zine on there as well?
Yeah,
well,
why isn't it there? Gar guy, you need to answer some questions next time we talk to you. But that's a good list actually there. I love to see the Pain Mag there. So there's lots of stuff to read up.
Yeah, so they have a bunch of older disk Macs, I think. We have Pain, Huggy, disk Macs.
There's plenty of.
Are added. And you can read them like in the comfort of the internet, as it's 2022, and that's where you read a disk Mac. Mm. But you get like an insight into the world of back in the day, from interviews to party reports. To nonsensical rants. It's all very, very
It's actually
good.
Very hilarious to read some of these, because I remember that, I mean, the Zine Macs have been digitalized on the Bitfellas platform. You can find it there at zine.bitfellas.org. But still, I mean, there's seeing these old content from those Macs. I mean, the stuff that we had in there is just like horrible.
it's kind of a warning to people that are listening and don't know. Like, if you look it up, be like, this is content of the time. And it's all written by a bunch of teenagers, like back in the 80s.
Yeah, it's literally.
And 90s. So, yeah.
Literally teenage stuff. Yeah. So, and I'm faster. I'm sending you productions faster than anyone else out there and stuff like that. So it was that was the time when you were still sending floppy disks to each other, right? So, different times.
Yeah, it was basically the one outlet you had to kind of like have interviews and kind of like brag to your friends of like, I saw your demo on that party and it sucked. And we're going to beat your ass the next party. Which, yeah, it's...
But then again, when it comes to old stuff, I mean, you guys are the same thing with the old editions of this podcast as well. It's like, oh no, it's horrible. Remember, it was like 10 years ago. Yeah, so it's...
me mostly is like, oh my God, more than 10 years. Like, this is terrible. Like, I don't even know who that person was back in the day. Now, I guess stuff ages with time, but it gives you that insight into that braggadocio and less communication. And now with internet, there's so much communication that you can just instantly go and pull at and thumb something down and go like, this was garbage. And back in the day, you kind of had to, like, if you wanted to have a bigger platform, you put something in a disc mag and then people would read it and they get mad at you and they will come find you at a party. You wrote something about me in either your scroll text or in a disc mag.
Actually, we had that a lot in the time that, like, why did you write that article? And at parties, you needed to answer questions about that, why you destroyed someone in an article. And it was like, this to the typical stuff that was happening back then, yeah. But
journalism, I think it's part of it. It was like demonstrating level journalism. It was kind of like keeping it in check, and you had the charts. Did Zine do charts as well?
I think so, yeah. We did some demo review stuff. But no, it was mostly not the chart related stuff. It was more than someone being a dick at some other party and behaving like an idiot. And then, oh my God, you write that about me and stuff like that. So it was horrible.
Party reports, absolutely big deal and really fun to read, like a bunch of kids on their way to a party.
Half a year later.
First laptops around. Yeah, it's absolutely fun.
So yeah,
tragic. Always adds to tragedy.
But I liked your term braggadocio, whatever that was. But
yeah, bragging. It's like you kind of like that was what it was, right? You kind of like, yeah, I'm gonna like, oh, you're good. No, I'm gonna.
I think it was actually solely about that. So, so maybe we should move on to some other things that are not about bragging, which well is kind of difficult with the Meteorics. But I mean, you get an award and you. Afterwards, you brag about it?
It's kind of about bragging. So,
difficult not to. It was funny, actually, to see all the photos from the people who received their revision stages around Christmas. And everyone was going like, yeah, finally, I got that. And thanks so much. And
just delayed, but still happening. So, yeah, Meteorics coming up. And you can, if this goes out, I'm told you can... like put productions up for Meteoric consideration on both Puwet and DemoZoo. So do go look for productions from last year you feel deserve to be honored once more. And again, to just make it clear, Meteorics doesn't have a winner. Meteorics has laureates and then one special laureate. But it's it's a good show, a good moment to like. Put some productions that might also have snowed under or kind of gotten lost to like push them into the public eye a bit more.
Yeah, and also do respect the jurors' work there because they're digging through a lot of demos as well to actually get proper nominations and nominees and everything like that. So it's a worthy cause to dig into the demo scene.
Absolutely, it's a fun, and it's taken, again, as I said before, it's been taken very seriously by everybody involved, so don't think it's just like a joke award show. Those are awesome. Shout out to Dub. I can't wait to see another one. But, this is absolutely a serious endeavor, so go do your job as the people of the demo scene and go make that happen.
Yes. So any parties coming up?
Loads.
That's good.
And Axel will tell us which ones.
Okay, so the next parties are Love Bite at February 11th, and then Assembly Winter coming on February 24th to 27th. Are we expecting anything special there? Or what's your past experience with the Winter Edition?
I think they do have competitions, though, but I haven't really been following. Most of the noise from Assembly is during the summer event, that's for sure.
Yeah. But there is definitely competition on the winter event. Yeah. So
actually, there's one party that I was seeing in the list here that was Ski or Death. What was, I mean, that sounds like an interesting concept for a demo party.
That's a Finnish demo party in a bunch of cabins. People get really drunk.
Okay, so death is going to be pretty likely if you're skiing after the party or, okay.
All right, so please stay until the end. Please stay until the end because we have a very special voice message. I heard that we received a voice message that we really want to share with all of you. So stay until after the interview. For special things. All right, so I think now it's time to go to the interview. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I have some serious questions there.
So. Yeah, I'm looking forward to hear you grill Super Oak, Axel, because I mean, I don't know that much about size coding anyway, so it's perfect.
It's not that I do either, just, so, but...
that's a good part. I mean, just get some good questions and good answers from him. That'll be good.
We will. So, for this episode, we have as a guest in our interview, a very special guest. It's Super Rogue of Marquee Design. He's a programmer. He's been around in the demo scene for a very long time, early 90s, but basically kind of came back in the recent years. And especially in size coding, and he is one of the organizers of the Love Byte demo party. Welcome, Super Oak.
Glad you have me.
It's good to have you to talk about size coding and all these interesting things. But yeah, let's first start. What is your prior experience in the demo scene? Where do you come from? Because you've been around before.
Yeah, I've been around since the early 90s, actually. So. Even before joining the demo scene officially, we were just making small demo stuff with friends. And this was like 1991, 92. And I showed them off at a local computer shop. And then we get kicked out every 30 minutes or something.
This story is the original story for so many scenes. I love it.
Yeah.
What was the content of those productions?
Yeah, those were... I think we had an... I had a Commodore 64, and then maybe I just bought my Amiga. So there were people doing way cooler stuff than we did. But we just started like everyone with some scrollers and some basic effects, some vector balls maybe. And then from there, we officially started a small group called Chronic. We did one production for it. And then we quickly renamed ourselves to Logic Design. And that was the label that... We attracted one other coder, Balance, first. And then from there, we did our first proper demo. And this was also around the time that there was the first demo party in the Netherlands, Bizarre 94, I think, where we actually found out that we are more people than just us doing this thing. And this was the first demo party organized in the Netherlands and also the first party where we released our first demo.
And Oki was probably there.
No, I wasn't, actually, because I had just...
Oh, come on.
Super Oak started just before me. We were in the same circles back in that time, but it was just before me. And just before I know we're going to get angry email, Venlo Meeting officially the first Dutch party, but it wasn't the demo party per se.
Yes, correct.
Super Oak wasn't wrong that Bizarre was the first proper demo party in Netherlands.
Okay.
So first demo.
Yeah, so from the Bizarre, we did the first demo. And then because we were in the same circles as Oki and his friends, also geographically, we kind of got to know each other. And then Jace, that also was in another group first, and joined us as well. And then we started to make actually more proper demos. So I think in that area, there were a couple of... years, 94, 95, 96, where we did demos under the Logic Design label. And then I continued with starting a small game company, and other guys joined TBL's PC division. And from there, they started to do the really cool stuff like Stash and Jizz and all that that stuff.
That's all Dutch TBL, yeah.
Yeah.
Started all humble beginnings in Logic Design. And what a great name, Logic Design. It's so incredibly 90s for some reason.
Yeah, it's a name if you look up in the dictionary. Like, oh, Logic, that sounds nice. Let's put design behind it.
Actually, I think that was a majority of many group names was like just flipping through dictionaries and, oh, what the word is that? Oh, it sounds great, but I have no clue about it. So, but we'll get back to that probably sometime later. But yeah, and then you took a break, and then what made you return?
Yeah, so from there, because I had to take a break because I finished my studies and I wanted to start a small gaming company because it wasn't, there weren't any, a lot of gaming companies in the Netherlands at that time. So I did that, and we did games for Game Boy, Game Boy Advance as well, and mobile phones. And Oki actually did an internship with us, which was really fun.
Really? Was he a good one?
Yes, he was really fun and really good at making awesome tracks.
Yeah, I made music for a few of the games. It was a great time.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was really fun. So, yeah, and then I, from that, I just did my own thing, and it wasn't only until 2019, because we did stay, we do stay in touch. So with the guys from TBL, Trapan, Artbay, those old school demo sceners, we go to like a park once a year called CP.
Yeah, like a bungalow park where we just hang out for a week.
For a week?
Yeah. So we have like a mini vacation for a week.
Okay.
And then, so each and every year, that's the same group of guys. So that's really fun. And then Oki visited like in 2019 again. And he was like hyping up the demo scene, like to Jace and other old demo scenes. Yeah, we should really join the demo scene. And
like I always like, come back. It's so fun.
Yeah. We really moved on. And look at this. He showed me some of the Assembly 2019 stuff. And I was just blown away by the stuff I saw. So, and then he convinced me to do another demo for Trapan. So I think that week we just made a demo from like really 90 and 99 software effects. Nothing new, nothing GPU or fancy, called Bateman, and released that at Outline 2019 party.
Right.
And that was actually a point where I returned to the demo scene.
And what made you shift then to the, or what piqued your interest in size coding then?
I think at that party, I was with somebody from Trapan, and he wanted to deliver a 128 byte for the intro compo at Outline. And he was, because I knew some assembler back in the day, and he was constantly asking me like, yeah, how should I do this? Or do you know any tricks to optimize? And I was like, yeah, I don't know this. And then started looking into it, and then I think within half an hour or an hour, it just came back all that, all those memories that that apparently were still in my head,
like a curse.
Probably, like, yeah.
I heard voices in my head.
And I think after that party, when I came home, I was like, yeah, the size coding thing, there might be something to it, and I just started trying stuff, going to a sizecoding.org website and just seeing what's out there in terms of intros and just trying to get a grasp of it myself. So I think that's what I did for the last few months of 2019. And then in January 2020, I released my first intro at rsync.
And that was also when you founded Marque, or?
Yeah, that was at Outline 2019. So we did the demo for Trapan,
which is also an old Dutch group, and it's like it's an old moniker. So yeah.
So we did that, and at that time, my girlfriend was also like, hey, what's this demo scene thing, and should I come to this party? And she also knows how to code a bit. So we were actually at Outline. She was coding a game for a girlfriend of her as like a birthday present, and I just finished the demo, so I was just twiddling thumbs there. She was like, yeah, there's a game compo here. Should we submit something to the game compo? And I was like, yeah, maybe. So we just started coding a game. And I think we made that game in like 8 hours or something. Submitted it. Then won the game compo there. And then we needed a title for it. So or a group name. So we both our real names start with Mar. So Martin and Marike. We need something with Mar, and then Marquee Design. I don't know why I had to stick to design.
Always need design in there. You always need design in there. I do agree.
I do see a pattern, logic design and Marquee Design, but exactly. Yeah.
All right. And that then you started, like, I just looked it up quickly. I mean, you released like over 30 productions since 2019. I mean, you were on fire in that time, or what happened there?
Yeah, so I started together with my girlfriend. First, we just did the game, so there wasn't any size coding involved yet. And I was just twiddling with size coding. And my girlfriend Blossom was like, yeah, what you doing? Yeah, I'm size coding. It's assembler, you don't want to know. Yeah, I do want to know. So I gave her a book with some assembly instructions. So yeah, so here, go ahead. And then she started doing some coding of her own. And she made two small productions. And I think the second thing she made was what later became Beat by a Girl, an intro that she did. So, and that was like beginning of 2020. So we did, I did two intros myself, Homogenic and NanoRail, and then Revision was up. And we were like, okay, maybe we should try and do something for Revision. So we did Enigma there, which became second place after Memories by Helmut. And she really helped a lot on there. She was much better than me at FPU coding, so all the mod stuff. That was really nice teamwork. So
that's awesome to have actually that, like, both have like your powers there. That's cool.
Yeah.
But I think let's quickly go back, because we've been talking about size coding and about intros. Maybe we should quickly explain what actually is size coding and what are these intros? Because people that are listening might know demos and intros, and some people are probably aware of size coding.
Yeah. But
very, very briefly, can you explain what the size coded intro, like what is it and how does it work?
Yeah, so there are two terms that get confused. Sometimes it's like size coding in general, which usually means like the old 64Ks and 4K intros. And then... also referring to size coding as more the tiny intros.
Yeah.
So there isn't a hard definition for that, but I would say it's between like 8 and 512 bytes. So the really small stuff where a packer cannot help you out with any packing because it's too small to do any proper packing.
And you just literally said 8 bytes, right? It starts at 8 bytes.
Correct.
Which is like 8 characters.
Yes. So you can't, in a good conscience, you can do a lot there. But I think from 32 bytes onwards, there are already some cool stuff that you can pull off. So, there's size coding, there's tiny intro coding. And within the tiny intro coding, seeing like the 256 bytes is what most people know. And it's also the most popular category. And then you have similar scenes elsewhere. Code art or code golfing, tweet cards, Twitter, tweet gems. So those are all scenes that are adjacent to the demo scene, but also doing their own size coding thing on different platforms as well.
Yeah, so that's basically size coding as in like in a small size of the tweet gems, or indeed like code that fits in a tweet, which is 128 characters.
It used to be, I think it's 280 characters.
Yeah,
so
280 now. So you have a little bit more. But so I do also explain, like with you, we're going to talk mostly about tiny intros, like this tiny size coding.
Yes, correct.
So really from the 8 bytes to the 256, 512 is already quite big. But up until a kilobyte basically is like the really under the kilobyte programs. Just to explain to people, like this is, and so the effects, as you said, like with 32 bytes, you can already do interesting things. So it's all visual things. So what exactly can you do? Like what how does that work?
So do you mean the really small sizes here or?
No, just in general. I think small sizes, I mean for everybody that's listening, up until 512 bytes is small. So in general, these small sizes, what can you do?
Yeah, so that's the question. Can you do narrative, or can you just do an impressive effect, or can you do proper audio?
Yeah.
So those are all things that you have to weigh in and divide your bytes between. So doing really good audio and a really good visual effects is quite hard to do in 256 and below especially. 512 bytes can actually become a more interesting category in the future, because I think it is possible to do proper soft synth and proper effects in that size limit.
It sounds like magic to me.
That's interesting. Like
512 bytes, right? So we're talking about, like, because indeed, back in the day, we had these effects. Usually they didn't have any sound. And in the last few years, because the size coding scene as well is very thick together, and we've seen sound is actually now pretty much common for 128 bytes and up, I think.
Yeah, I think we've seen over the years, I think from the 90s onwards, we've just seen that barrier to, like, what does a 4K look like? Well, that's totally different today than that was in like Assembly 96. Or what does a 1K intro entail? So we see that barrier shift down every time. Maybe 10 years ago, a 256 byte intro was one visually looking good looking effect. And now this can be done in 128 bytes or 64 bytes even. We've seen Helmut do multiple effects in 256 bytes. So I think we're now at a point where we can safely say, especially the last 2 years, that in 32 bytes is about the minimum limit where you can actually do an effect that you designed and thought about and executed on, instead of maybe being random noise like 20 years ago or 15 years ago or even 10 years ago. And then the more bytes you have, the more things you can do.
Mm-hmm. And so to talk about, like, you make these size coded intros, they run on computers. Usually they run on DOS and older computers, right?
Yes. So DOS is a popular platform. And even within the size coding community, we consider this more of the high end platforms. So that would be, you can batch this together with maybe a Linux intro, or we have also RISC OS, which is an ARM processor. So there you have, well, at least 256 colors, maybe some true color, and then also have access to some of the higher resolutions. And then, as if coding in a tiny size isn't difficult enough, we also have old school intro categories. So this would mean doing tiny intros for things like an Apple II or Commodore 64, ZX Spectrum, Atari 8-bit. So then you would limit yourself not only in size, but also in, like, hardware and speed and stuff like that.
Does that actually limit your audience a lot when you have a very tight framework of how it can be made at all? Or does everyone have this kind of setup? Because I wouldn't know how to start there.
Yeah. So, so there are two things here. One would be, can anyone in or without, or inside or outside the demo scene, can they run your production? So maybe like some of the demos these days, some people will just watch it on YouTube. Then there's a second category of people that would actually run it in an emulator. And then there's a third category of people that actually own the older hardware. So either a DOS machine or an Atari or a Commodore, and then run it on the actual hardware. And there, I think you can access a lot of people with video and emulators. But I think there are still things that the size community, coding community can do, is to make intros more accessible on newer platforms as well. So maybe trying to do something that runs on Windows, something like that. And then the second part of your question, so how would you start writing some of these intros? For the older platforms, this would mean you would need to learn assembler for a specific processor, just like you would need to if you wanted to write an old school demo. So that's Z80 for ZX Spectrum, or 6502 for Commodore and Atari, or X86 for DOS or Linux intros. So yeah, this is quite a steep learning curve to start. And then in more recent years, we've also seen the introduction of the TIC-80 and Pico 8 and fantasy consoles like this. And I think this is a great opportunity to also have people that maybe are not so familiar with size coding or with programming, and some of the younger people to get a taste for size coding and the demo scene in general, and just write productions for a fantasy console like the TIC 80. Because here
can you quickly explain for listeners that might not know what a fantasy console is? What are the TIC 80 and the Pico 8?
Right. So fantasy consoles are like a virtual computer system with some specifications that are fixed, like a resolution and the number of colors you can use. It's usually 16 colors. For example, the Pico 8 has a resolution of 240 by 136 pixels. And the cool thing about fantasy consoles is it's an all-in-one environment. So you can run an intro or a demo, but at the same time, you can just start a code editor and just start typing away and running, maybe making some alteration or just start something fresh. And then within minutes, you have something on screen that you can tweak with, save, even upload to the web and show other people. So it's a very easy point of access for people new to demo scene and size coding.
And if you want to point people at a specific resource page, is that something that you would, where do you exchange? Is there a specific sub community that you would point people to that?
Yeah. So,
are interested in this?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have actually quite a big community, I would say. I would say there's the size coding website, which is also what I visited back in the day, I would say, but it's actually 2 years ago.
back in 2019.
Exactly. So, sizecoding.org, it used to be a DOS x86 based wiki page for size coding, but now, since then, all other platforms that you can imagine have been added, like the TIC 80, Pico 8, Linux, 6502 based systems like Atari, Commodore, ZX Spectrum. So basically any system you can think of, you can find information there specifically targeted to size coding. And then we also have a size coding Discord. And this started, I think, about 1 year ago, maybe a bit more, let's say 14 months. And it has since grown to about 500 members from all, within the demo scene, outside the demo scene. And there also we have different sections for different platforms. So 6502, Z80, fantasy consoles. So there's a lot of people there. And we actually also done a beginner's guide for this Discord, which I think is something maybe other parts of the demo scene can do as well, where we just explain what is the size coding, what is the demo scene, for those not familiar. And here are a couple of basic effects, and this is how they work. So anything from a plasma or tunnel to more complex ray marching or a ray casting example, we just give some dummy code and try to explain the effects for newcomer that are not familiar with any of the demo scene effects as well. And the other thing that we've done since the last Love Byte party actually is set up a YouTube channel with seminars. So there are, for visual learners, there are seminars for all kinds of home computers as well.
Awesome. Okay, great.
And speaking about Love Byte, Love Byte is you're an organizer of this party, and that's basically a party, an online demo party for now because of the pandemic, but that's focused on tiny size coding categories, if I'm correct, right?
Yes.
So can you explain a bit more what happens at Love Byte?
Right. So what we try to do with Love Byte is to have an online event targeted to the smaller size, tiny intro productions. So at other parties, sometimes there was a category for, say, 256 bytes, or sometimes there wasn't at all. But especially in the lower sized category, so going even lower than 256 bytes, 128, 64, 32, etc., there wasn't anything out there that served that interest in those categories. And at the same time, I noticed that, especially in these smaller sizes, people were able to do more and more. So maybe in the past where size limits have shifted down for 4K or 1K, now even in the smaller size categories, there were some pretty awesome productions happening. So yeah, I figured like, how about organizing an online event focused around these categories and actually have competitions for anything from 32 bytes up to 256, and this year even 512. But also do something like limited graphics, like use only 256 pixels or just 256 character byte beat for a music compo, and just focus entirely on these tiny productions. So that's actually how that started.
Would you say that it's a completely different community as well? Like, you started with demos and then went to size coding. Would you say that there's people just interested in size coding and don't care about demos? Is that something that is that a party of people that would use, that you would say is a bit separate from the interest of the demo scene, or what do you, how do you say that?
I would think for the most part, these are demo sceners. And I don't know how it is in other parts of the demo scene or other communities, but there's definitely a bunch of them are like old school sceners from the 90s and 2000s, where they were still doing a lot of software effects before the shaders took over. So I would say that would be a large chunk of people. But then we also see some new people that were out of the outside of the scene, for example, doing these tweets or just doing games on a fantasy console, and then discovering the demo scene and size coding scene through that.
Right. And you, I mean, do you, are you equally interested in a demo production, or how complex a demo production is made, or is that, are you more interested in the way you program things in a very small size amount? Is that what piqued your interest, or what is your personal satisfaction in doing the productions that you're doing?
Yeah. Well, first of all, as an enthusiast of the demo scene, I like all productions, big and small, and I also like a lot of the old school productions. So I actually love watching them all. I love the creativity going on. Then for me personally, and I think this is also true for a lot of other people in the size coding community, I do like the unique mix of puzzle solving and expression or expressing creativity that is maybe more relevant for the smaller size categories than it is for something like a demo intro or even 4K intro. And I think also having a specific set of limitation, whether it being like an old school platform for, which might also be true for like old school demo category, or limiting your size by yourself in size, can spark some extra creativity because there's limited resources to come by. And so you have to be creative in how to handle those constraints, I think. And also, let's be honest, I mean, doing a full-blown demo would require a large team and a lot of spare time. And like maybe yourself know as well, there's only so much free time that you have these days. So I can understand why some of these people would rather do a tiny production than spend months on a larger production.
Do you see that happen? Do you see people come back and indeed like, oh, it's easier to approach because I can do this by myself? And
some people make podcasts instead, so we don't. It's easier to be done.
But do you feel like for size coding that it's harder for like the common man, like people that are not really deep in the code, to understand what's happening?
Yeah,
like that might be an extra barrier because it's so, as you said, like puzzle solving, so specific.
Yeah, I think there is. I mean, to for example, I can look like at a small production from Helmut or somebody else and just admire the code itself or the elegance of it. And this would not be true for someone even in a demo scene, which is familiar with like 4Ks and full-size demos that look way, way better than we can ever produce in this small footprint. But I think this question is actually broader to the demo scene itself. So if you were to ask friends and family that are not in the demo scene, like, hey, this is a 4K intro, how would you go about explaining that? Yeah, it's the size
of a document. One line of your 4K screen.
Yeah.
So, but is that, I think, like, might this even be a niche within the niche that, like, even within a demo scene, people, like, other, like, demo sceners might already get lost within size coding? Do you feel like it's more, it's difficult for maybe for people to grasp? Or did you get, like, do you get the feeling that actually people are really getting into it or getting, that it doesn't really matter? That also might be the case.
I think it's a fair assessment to say that it is a niche within a niche that the demo scene community at large already is. At the same time, we do see people, like I said, both old school sceners that maybe have kids and don't have enough time to spend on a full blown productions, and mad respect to those people that still can these days, but and think, yeah, I know a bit of assembly, or I'd like to learn a fantasy console and just work on something small that I can finish in a reasonable time frame and then submit that to a party. So I would say that we do see some old school people that maybe haven't been active for 10, 15 years return to the scene, which I think is a positive thing. And also people outside the demo scene through fantasy consoles joining as well. So I think that is a positive, but yeah, it's going to be a hard sell still.
I think that's fair to say, like, it's going to be a hard sell because it is such a specific thing, and visually, as you say, like, in the bytes, if you show it to somebody without context, they go like, that's a very blocky effect, or that's like, so that explaining that is really hard. I do get that. So, what do you see the trends going in size coding? Do you see, like, we talked about music coming in and, like, multiple parts maybe? You said narrative, which I think is awesome in context of, like, 512-byte or 128-byte or 256-byte intros. Narrative, like telling a story. Is that possible already? We have seen that more of that?
Yeah, I think we've seen that in the past. There is a ZX Spectrum intro out there that's just two blocks telling a small love story. So visually, it's very minimalistic, but that does leave room for some storytelling. And on the other hand, you have people who just want to show off their next tunnel or 3D effect. And maybe somewhere in between those ends of the spectrum, there is some interesting bit of narrative that can be told in such a small size.
So you think we'll see more of that?
I hope
you
we do.
You hope that?
Yeah, okay. I hope we do.
It would be awesome. I really would love that if we get, like, narrative, story, and emotion in an intro that small.
Yeah, I try to do a little haiku thing. It was released last year at party, which was a small haiku saying something about today's era of technology. But then again, it's four lines of text with an effect in the background, some sound.
That can be profound. I mean, if it's profound, like, I like the poetry in a small size. So, yeah, about on Lovebyte, you also host the Nano Awards?
Yeah, correct. So, the Nano Awards is something we set up simultaneously to Lovebyte. And there we wanted to actually celebrate these small-sized productions that normally would not get either nominated even or awarded for at larger awards like the Meteorics. So, and especially if you're doing old school. I mean, you're already limiting yourself to size and then also to a platform. It's hard to get nominated at other award shows, and it's nice to give those people some shout out and respect as well. So I think the Nano Awards are a good vehicle for that. Yeah, so that, I think that's how it started last year at Lovebyte. Then we did the awards for one for high end actually being DOS or Linux. And
I was going to ask, what's the high end? So
perspective of this is awesome. I love it.
And then one for the old school platforms, like again Atari, Spectrum, stuff like that. And that was quite a success, I'd say. And then this year we focused mostly on getting the nomination processes integrated into Puet and DemoZoo. So this year people could actually do both the nominations and the voting. This year at Lovebyte we do the next edition also with the high end and old school categories.
Right. I actually think it's a good idea to have like an award within like that addresses this specific kind of dedication that needs to be there in order to do those productions, because I think, I mean, I personally speaking from my end, it's for me, it's difficult as I absolutely not understanding any programming. It's sometimes difficult for me to see what is the tough part to do that in a certain, I mean, I understand that it's difficult to do that in a certain size limit, but for me always it's a mix of, and I might be a bit provocative on that, but it's the combination of the audio and visual side. So if there's like an effect that has no audio but is tough to program in that size limit, then I may appreciate the difficulty of it, but still as a production, in the end, I find it hard to, I will probably not watch it again a second time, because to me the whole thing always needs to come together. And that's, do you see that as a critical limit for doing productions that, I mean, you need probably to have some audio side of it in order to have a certain attractiveness to show it to people? Or does the technical difficulty of programming it outweigh the necessity of needing to have any audio or, like you said, narrative for that?
Yeah, I first of all, I think that's a fair statement. So, I mean, in the end, you're going to be judged by visuals, or in an ideal world, the combination between visual and audio effects. And like even in DOS, where you have some colors and some CPU power, you're still bound by like a low 320, 200 resolution. So that visuals and audio are going to suffer when you go below certain sizes. And I think it's fair for people to just want to see like a nice production. And the lower sizes you go...
I mean, this is a harshly voiced, to actually be honest, because they're nice productions, but it's like it's a different... Like it's a pleasing, is maybe what you said, like more aesthetically pleasing than... Maybe it's a bit harsher to look at smaller size intros.
Yeah.
Because they're rougher around the edges. I think that's more what you mean. This sounded very hard to yourself.
Well, no, I actually agree here. I think there's something that we can do to maybe try higher resolution stuff and try to improve visually. I mean, especially in the lower size categories, I can fully understand people's going like, ugh. Not for me.
What I mean, am I looking at?
we have like a 16 byte showcase category at Lovebyte, and we will have it again this year. And this will be for the hardcore nerds only. I mean, I can look at the somebody's code and go like, "Oh, goddamn, this is a really good trick, and I wish I thought of it," and vice versa. So this is just us.
Yeah, but I love that. I mean, it's absolutely has its merit. I love that. And it's like you don't have to, it sounds like you want to apologize for it. You absolutely shouldn't. But it is that kind of bridge indeed, and especially at a compo in a big party hall, and then there is no sound. And I think Axel raises that point, because sound is this bomb part, but it's a really important part to fill a room.
Yes. I and I do I, I agree with that. And then also, I think there are good examples. For example, somebody like Sensorstyle, who also won the 256 byte intro competition at last LoveByte, does an amazing job at just showing visuals with no sound whatsoever. And this year at the next LoveByte, we'll also have tiny executable graphics and 256 bytes. And I think some people might be amazed with what's possible on that size limit as well. But yeah, you're absolutely right. And I hope we can build some more bridges with things like Byte Battle and just awesome visual productions.
I guess, but let's get into the Byte Battle real quick, because indeed, like, it's like the good thing is, I wanted to say about all these productions, they fit in the floppy, like, so we can just distribute them very easily.
Yeah, I think Sensorstyle came to me the other day, and he's like, "Yeah, I backed up all the productions since the beginning of time, and I think they fitted like in a few megabyte zip file."
Right.
That is a pro. But yeah, Byte Battle. So that's something that happens at LoveByte, but also has happened at other parties. I think Outline, we did a few as well. So we already know the Shader Showdowns. Can you quickly explain what the Byte Battle is?
Yeah, so we wanted to have something like a Shader Showdown, but then targeted towards some... Well, but also not only have a restriction of time, but also in size. I thought that would be a fun addition.
Of course.
Make it harder.
Why not?
And I think this seed was planted at, at Outline 2019, when I was talking to all these old school demo programmers that were like, yeah, shaders, but I don't know. I know nothing about shaders. Wouldn't it be nice if I could compete with my Atari skills against somebody with maybe a Commodore background or somebody doing some DOS productions? And this got me thinking. And then I was thinking, maybe we could write a tool like Bonzomatic, but for all these old school platforms and have export functionality and stuff like that. But then I started tinkling with the TIC-80 Fantasy Console myself. And I was like, yeah, we could build all this stuff, but TIC-80 is it's an open source project. Maybe we could talk to the developer and see if we can string something together. And at the last LoveByte, we literally stringed some tools together to make it work. And we had a one versus one battle, just like a Shader Showdown, but restricted in time as well as size. So you have to create an awesome effect in 25 minutes, and it has to be 256 characters or less. Go. And this was a great success. Even people outside of size coding were like, yeah, I like this. I like the tension here. And Yuoki did some commentary. You were like absolutely enthusiastic and enjoying doing the commentary and watching the Byte Battles.
It's that extra layer of pressure for having the size, because if people don't fit in the 256 bytes, so you see the bytes count down as well during the battle. So we had in the first round Gasman actually finishing on 260 and being disqualified. Yeah. And the tension is unbearable. So it's even harsher than the Shader Showdown. Although the Shader Showdowns are really hard, but it has that extra level. And also because it's TIC-80 and it's very visual, because the characters all fit on the screen.
Yeah.
So you can actually kind of see what happens. And I think for size, if you don't know what size coding is, and you can actually look at people typing the things and kind of follow along, gives you an insight of like, oh, this is how these effects are made, because that is still the magic of these tiny intros. Is like,
I think this is a huge plus for audience participation. That, I know a bit of shader coding, but it's hard to get lost when people are just scrolling up and down, and just having all the code on a single big pixel screen seeing typed, people can follow along. And the Byte Battles were a huge success at last LoveByte. We continued doing them for Outline 2021, and then we did a dedicated fantasy console party this summer called LoveByte Battlegrounds, which was all one big huge Byte Battle tournament with some competition sprinkled alongside it. That was amazing. We added keywords as well, so not where people were only restricted in size and time, but also having to stick to a keyword that they were giving prior to the match. Yeah, it was awesome.
You guys are evil.
It was hellish. Sometimes keywords were, that's where the whole duck thing came from. But it was like, yeah, it just all these restrictions, but it does work, even though it sounds absolutely terrifying to participate in.
Actually, when you say that, people in the audience will understand this is not right for us musicians. But is there something that, I mean, how long, I mean, do you, when you see the code on the screen, do you actually visualize in your head what it's going to look like? I mean, if you follow someone else, can you see what the effect is going to be like? Because that is beyond my imagination.
Yeah, so there's also going to be a group of people that's it's going to be harder for to follow than others. But I think even with a minimal code experience, you can kind of see, oh, he's doing a circle here, he's drawing a line. I can see some sine function going on. So you can follow along, and we hope to have commentators do their best explaining what is going on.
Okay.
possibly, and also because it's in Lua, which is a pretty known scripting language, and it's actually quite readable.
Okay.
So give it a shot, Axel. I'd love Byte. Go take a look at the Byte battles and see it done. Because yeah, I think we haven't really talked about the technical aspect of how you make a tiny intro and what do you need for it. And I think it gets very technical very quickly. But can you do a rundown of like a 256 byte effect? Like, how do you set that up, and what do you need, and how does it work?
Yeah. So first, let me start off with the most approachable approach, and that is just to download TIC80 for any machine. Go to livecodedemozoo.org. There is all the code for all the byte battles that you have seen, that you can watch back on YouTube. See the code there, paste it inside the editor, run it, start tweaking it, and you can see, because there's so little code there, so easy just tweaking, you can get a good start with that. And I think it's approachable for everyone. And even somebody like myself who does assembler stuff as well and other stuff, I use TIC80 a whole lot for just prototyping small stuff, testing things out. I have it installed at my work, at home, everywhere.
Because it also runs on everything.
It runs on everything, yeah. So that would be something I would advise if you totally want to start from scratch. And then and then for maybe doing some more sophisticated productions with design, maybe different effects, there are just different approaches. Some people just go at it at assembler level and start typing away and see where it ends up, and maybe stumble along a few happy accidents which happen in those sizes. And then go from there. And then other people, this is something we do for some productions, we prototype first into C language just to get a sense of if the effect is working. And if we have an idea like, yeah, this is doable, then we start chewing it down and then at some point go to assembler language and start implementing it there.
Do you have a visual idea first sometimes? Or do you start programming and see what comes out visually once you start the programming? Is the idea first, or do you start programming first most of the time?
With us, that's always, I say us because I do this together with my girlfriend. It always starts with the idea. This can be different for maybe some other people, but you have an idea and you have always have a ballpark figure of how small it will end up. So sometimes I have an idea, I say, oh, this would be nice for 64 bytes. Or this would be a nice 128 bytes intro. This would be nice for 256. And then usually when implementing, you actually end up around that number.
So you mean you start aiming for 128, and then when you figure out that you cannot do it in that size, you're going for the 256.
Yeah, this is quite literally what happened to something like Haiku. This was like a 128 effect, and then we just had to pad it up with sound and extra text to make it to 256.
Because what is the longest you've spent shaving off a last byte?
Yeah, I'm gonna
He's still working on it.
Yeah. I'm going to mention a production that nobody is going to ever dig. But I think, okay, first of all, we did spend quite a bit on the Enigma production, which also we did a C prototype for, and then start dwindling it down, improving it along the way. We spent a lot of time on that. But I think I actually spent quite a few attempts and quite some time on a 16-byte intro code Wanderlust, which is a parallax scrolling floor, but in 16 bytes. And I had to do several approaches, put it away for a few weeks, then try another approach until finally I found something that works. And I'm going to love that product forever, and nobody else is going to, but that's okay. It's the journey.
Yeah, but that makes it awesome. That's awesome because it's like 16 bytes. It's 16 characters you have to type. How long can that take? But it shows that it takes a lot of time to actually get it working in the way you want. And
yeah,
having that restriction, so that's like that last byte when you have your 256-byte intro
yeah,
at 257 bytes, you don't know where to get that last byte from.
Yeah. And even with talks, I mean, we talk a lot on the Size Coding Discord, Helmut, Bass, Rola, other people. And if you talk to somebody like Helmut and say that, which production are you most proud of? He's not going to mention Memories, which got him like, which was a great intro to revision. Yeah. He's going to mention, yeah, this 16-byte IFS fractal that I spent 3 months on working, which nobody knows that it exists. And no.
It all ties it nicely together of like, because indeed Memories was a multi-part 256-byte intro, which has like several parts and that music, and it blew everybody away. But it's these hard 16-byte intros that, as Axel said, are hard to watch by people that don't know what it's about. And those are the ones you're the most proud of because they were so fucking hard to do. I love that whole aspect of it, like the niche within the niche. This is something that, as you said, like, I will love this intro forever. It was 16 bytes. It was hell to make, but goddamn, I did it. So yeah, it's awesome. I love that. Yeah, I just love that. It's awesome to hear. Wanderlust, everybody, look it up.
Considering that you actually released like 30 productions over the last 2 or 3 years, how much, I mean, you mentioned that you spent some time on it, but how much on average do you spend on a production like that?
It really depends. I gotta be honest, after like the productions that we did in 2021, I think there are 20 or so, but most of those were either side products or stuff that we already had around, so repackaged some old stuff just to have some party support here and there. I think the early, like, because I was so busy organizing Lovebyte, and I did the 32-byte Blake 32 intro, which was, which a lot of people inside the Size Coding community really like, because it's quite a quite an advanced effect for 32 bytes. So I kind of burned out on that. So the productions we did last year were easy productions, sort of. But something like Enigma is weeks, 1.5 months from start to finish. But yeah, it really depends. They aren't all like that.
I do love it for these productions that are tiny productions. And I hope that we give people that are listening a sense of like that it takes just as much work and it's just as hard, but on a completely different level than a giant demo. But yeah, awesome. So Lovebyte coming up 11th of February, all the competitions. Are small music, small graphics, so executable graphics as well now. And I love last year's 256 pixel graphics. They were tiny, but they were lovely. So I can't wait to see what happens there. So is there anything that you want to end with, Super Rogue? Did you want to tell the world?
Yeah, so if you're interested in Size Coding, come visit our Discord server. Come go visit sizecoding.org. See if it's anything you like. There are some playlists on Puget that are made with the best 256-byte intros, best 128-byte intros, and stuff like that. Of course, very subjectively, but there are quite a few people watching those lists, and I think it gives a good overview of what it's about. And come check out Lovebyte 2022. We have competitions for all. We have 512 pixel graphics competition. We will have tiny executable graphics this time around, 256-byte games, byte battles, byte jams, DJ sets, seminars, the whole shebang. It's like a mini revision for SizeCode.
DJ sets within 256 bytes or what?
256-byte DJ sets. I'm looking forward to 256-byte games, because that is like a game in 256 bytes that is mental. So I'm looking forward to see what it is. And it's, yeah, thank you for giving us an insight into this tiny world. And it sounds awesome.
It's amazing, yeah.
And it's hard. And I would like to thank you so much for your time. We'll be at Love Byte.
So I guess the conclusion is size does matter, right?
It does.
It really does. And thank you guys for having me. It's been awesome. And also, you guys doing the podcast, it's been amazing for the scene. I've listened to every episode you guys did, and I think it's been a blessing the last year.
Oh, so you were the one. Thanks, man.
You were the one. Oh, no, but thank you so much. Thank you. We appreciate it. So, yeah, thank you for joining us. And
sure.
Thanks for your time, man.
All right. Bye-bye.
So, Axel, I hope that gave you a better insight on size coding.
Yeah, actually it did, because I actually honestly don't have a clue about size coding, not at all. I mean, not about general coding at all, but size coding is a whole different thing. And it was really interesting to see what makes these people tick and what the challenges are and what the difficulties are and how much time you spend on things like that, actually. So it apparently gives you an opportunity to have more output than when you're doing demo productions, because you have an idea and you're challenged on your own, I think, you more or less to find a solution to that. And you're not that dependent on other people to bring in their assets. So, and it's really nice to also see that SuperOak is working on this with his girlfriend. So that's a whole different thing, which is not going to happen at my home, but...
It's like programming together is always a good thing. And are you going to download TKD now, Axel?
Yeah, well, I'm probably not much use trying it out, but I'm definitely going to follow Lovebyte. So that should be interesting.
It's still on my list to check it out, but Afron done with cables. It might take a while.
So yeah, thanks again for the chat, SuperOak. So that was great. And overall, very, very inspiring to see these people work on that.
Yeah, I think very cool stuff. And go find the Discord, the website, sizecoding.org for the website, and the Discord that we'll link from our social media as well. Join the Sizecoding Discord. And it is a very friendly, very tight community of people that are super, just really love to code and to squash bytes. So if you're interested, go find them. They're a super friendly bunch of people. And make some productions. And I think if they're very small, you can all fit them on your floppy disks or small USB sticks. That is absolutely a pro. In these times of big media, small media. So the thing that I told you before, you should wait for is happening. So yeah, we have received a very special message, from
the fellow
of the Palm. Coming from... our previous conversation where we were talking about like origins of group names. So let's take a listen to what he has to
tell us. Yeah, bring it on.
Hi, Oki. You were asking about the origin of the name The Planet of Leather Moomins, our demo group. The name was invented by a person who goes by the name Moomi, which is the Finnish word for Moomin. Moomins, as you might know, are mythical creatures that live in a place called Moomin Valley. If you don't know Moomins, you should definitely Google them. Anyway, this guy is called Moomi, and he started the group probably way back in 1993 or 1994. I think it was him and some other dude in the group originally. I first came into contact with him on the channel Coders on IRC. He said he was looking for people to do graphics for his demos. I think our sense of humor was similar. We both like parodies, Monty Python and stuff. So I quickly hooked up with him, and he introduced me as a 16-year-old to drinking alcohol, among other things. So thanks for that. I think the name was meant to evoke like a 1950s B-movie feeling, something like Attack of the 50 Feet Women or Plan 9 from Outer Space, so the planet of leather movements. We were planning to do a poster like that for the first demo, but we never used the name graphically in that way. That probably would have been too much for my graphics and type skills back in the day with no Photoshop. And even more strangely, in our first demos, we just used the acronym TPOLM. We never did write out what that meant. I have no idea how the public was supposed to know what the letter stood for. Maybe we said so in the info file, who knows. Anyway, the important question is, of course, how do you pronounce it? Some people say T-Polm. Of course, T-P-O-L-M. But myself, I just say T-Polm.
So, finally we know where that name comes from. The planet of the letter Moomins. And I love these kind of origin stories. It's good to hear. So thank you so much, Feather, for enlightening us with the history of this name. And it's a shame that you have a name based on 1950s B-movies and then never made that poster. That's kind of
it's hilarious.
So nobody ever realized.
They probably aren't the only ones.
Exactly. So yeah, let us know if you have an interesting group name and if you want to be featured in this. Messages about the origins of group names. I think this is a really important thing because it's so fun to hear where people have come up with these names and what the origins are. Because the poem, most people might not have even known it stands for the Planet of the Letter Moomins.
True.
I got to learn it by actually voice-overing the Meteorics. I think even the scene.org awards, the last one for the final breakpoint. But that's why I got to know it. But otherwise, it was like, okay, T-Palm, that's cool.
So did this completely mix up your ways of pronouncing it in the past? Or is that the way you pronounce it in the past?
I've said T-Palm before, but that was before I actually got it explained as well. So during the voiceovers, I think that most of the times I have actually said the planet of leather moomins, and all of it's like, that's a cute thing. And it directly connects to Finland, though, because of the moomins, of course.
The moomins, yeah, lovely. But yeah, there's many of these abbreviation group names that we have that we don't know what they actually mean. Mm-hmm. We might not immediately know what they mean. So I'm shouting out to those, especially the Ambifaxes, TBCs, and all these other groups in the demo scene to explain where it stands for. TBL we know, but do we really?
Yeah, they probably have a fake real name and that's completely different plan than the original one. So yeah.
Is it the Black Lotus?
It's the same thing with a lot of group names containing numbers. I'd say Razor 1911, for instance. Why 1911? Mm-hmm. Well, it was 2992 and it's a long story, so I won't be going into that one. But yeah. Lots of these things are happening. So
let us know. Let us know. Send us to zineradioshow@scene.org where your group name comes from, and we can put it in the show, and we can give a bit of a history lesson every episode because that's lovely.
Yes.
All right. So I think that wraps it up for this show. So let's do the official wrap up. This show was hosted by Oki, Axel, and Ziphoid and produced and edited by Shana and Luguber, who currently take bribes by people who want to be in the next podcast, so be quick. We will be back in March with the next episode. Special thanks to Super Oak, Scene.org, Scenestad, Echtzeit, and Bitfellas. Send your questions and anything else to zineradioshow@scene.org, our Twitter or Facebook accounts, or on Discord or Puet. Wherever you want to reach us, we are everywhere. If you like the show, please share it with your friends, subscribe, and give us a positive rating on the app you are using. It helps us. You can find us on Scenestad, Spotify, and wherever you prefer to listen to your podcasts. And Hakkari Radio. I'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Okay, this is redundant. The group is going to kill us. Shall we just do the whole thing over? Like, shall we just start over completely? Okay. Cut.